And so part of what I can do is make sure that, again, we're meeting those learners with that speed, with that language, and with images that resonate with them so that they feel like they were thought about during the development of the training, which creates that buy-in, and then they are able to retain and apply it better.
Welcome to the Innovation in Compliance Podcast, part of the Compliance Podcast Network. Join us every week as we talk with industry innovators who are making compliance to help business run more efficiently and, at the end of the day, more profitably. Here's your host, Tom Fox.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox, back for another episode. Today, you're in for a real treat because I have one of my favorite people in all of compliance, Asha Palmer. Asha, first of all, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for being here, Tom. It's great. It's great.
Asha, I haven't checked in with you since you've changed jobs, so I wanted to see if you could tell us what you're currently up to and maybe explore the role you have now and how you're using the skills that you've developed literally from college, law school, U.S. Attorney's Office, Adversa, OneTrust, and everywhere in between, of course, living overseas as well going forward. So what are you up to these days?
Tom, you know the best lessons I apply are the ones I learned from my kids. So I got to mention that.
We're going to get to that.
You know, I am on a mission, Tom. I am a woman on a mission to really impact the ethics and compliance profession. You named all the things I've done, all the skills I feel like I've built. But what I don't feel like I've contributed is, how does what I've learned and how can I apply what I've learned to help and advance the profession? And one of the great things I've learned is that we can't be sustainable or scalable without the help and benefit of technology. And technology, for a lot of us who are lawyers, scary, right? Scary, scary, scary. And so how do we partner with technology companies? How do we really understand how tech can propel the ethics and compliance profession is the mission that I am on today in this new position, in this new role. And I really believe that the skills I've gained in all those things you said, all those professions, all those experiences have brought me to where I am today to be able to make that contribution to learning, to impacting individuals so they know what to speak up about. They know what is right, wrong, against the values of the company, and they can actually apply that knowledge and that information in the times that they need to when they're doing their jobs on behalf of the company. Did that answer your question?
I'll accept your specific title now.
Yes. So I have moved to the business side. I am Senior Vice President of Compliance Solutions at Skillsoft, where I am leading the strategy and the product roadmap for our courses, our learning, our approach to learning, the data you get from learning, the technology that supports those learning objectives, and how you make that scalable, sustainable, and impactful within companies.
What would that entail inside Skillsoft, maybe on a day-to-day basis, or what's your day like?
No day is the same. My day is usually, my brain is exploding. And I'll tell you why. Because I know the challenges that an internal practitioner faces. I know the problems we're trying to solve for, and I know the controls we need to build to mitigate and manage the risks that our organization has. I know how to do that. I know how to build a culture of compliance and to have individuals understand what it means to create that culture of transparency, accountability within an organization. But let me tell you what I don't know. I don't know product development. I don't know engineering. I don't know a lot of the things that make technology successful for ethics and compliance practitioners to meet those outcomes that I just described. So on a daily basis, I get the privilege to be out of my comfort zone to ask questions about how technology, how we build our content supports adult learning, what risk areas we need to make sure that we are educating individuals on and why. I get to understand, how do I get more and more and more data out of the technology that fuels things like learning programs? I get to learn who are the many stakeholders in companies and talk to those stakeholders across companies about what those objectives are that they're trying to achieve. And then I get to bring all of that together and try to figure out what to do about it. And so with our team, with our technology team, our product team, our engineering team, as well as our sales team, I get to problem solve toward, are we solving the problems we're set out to do? Are we serving as effective partners for our customers? Are we meeting their needs and allowing them to distribute the learning and the training that they need to do to make that impact? Are we giving them the data and the technology they need to do that? And if the answer to any of those is no, I spend my day figuring out how the answer to that becomes yes. Because that's our job. That's our job as a provider and a partner to ethics and compliance practitioners to help them meet their outcomes. And so that is what I'm trying to do every day. Are we doing enough? Are we doing it the right way? Are we doing it in a way that meets the goals and objectives that our customers are trying to achieve within their organizations?
So I've had that role over the years several times as a consultant. And I remember the first time I did it, a company, they had a third-party risk management platform and they showed it to me. And I was talking to the CEO and I said, no one will buy this ever because no one will understand it because I don't understand it. You've been talking to IT folks. You've been talking to CTOs, CISOs. You sit down and explain that to a lawyer. They have no clue.
No idea. Right. None.
And his whole team around him, apparently no one had ever said that to him. So I know skills off a little bit. So I know you're not in that position, but are you able to translate either from engineer speak to compliance speak, or back the other way, from compliance / legal speak to engineer speak, to help everyone understand what's going to actually be effective for the practitioner or the end user inside a corporation who's actually seeing this learning material?
Right. And Tom, what's so interesting about learning, right, is that we have a few end users. We have the admin or the person who's in the system, maybe the compliance practitioner, maybe even the learning and development officer or representative. So we've got the admin who is an end user who has some objectives and goals they need to achieve, whether it's reporting to the board or showing the effectiveness of their program. You've got that. But we've got what I call our most important stakeholders, which are the learners. And so I've got to translate engineering speak, product speak, et cetera, to achieve outcomes for both of those populations who have different objectives. And we need different outcomes to come from both of those. And so, yes, I feel like I am effective in not necessarily being able to speak the same language, but to make the organization understand the why. And I know if Philip Winterburn were here right now, he would say, Asha, you always start with the why. Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this for the admin? Why are we doing this for the learner? Why are we doing this? What are we trying to drive from? What is the story we are trying to allow people to tell or to implement? And when I can describe that and articulate that, the engineers know how to build it. That's why I think having an internal practitioner at a tech company, so that the engineers and product owners who are charged with building those products can understand why they're building them. Because at the end of the day, we're not answering that why. We're doing a disservice to ourselves and to our customers. And so when I'm able to communicate why we need to build this, what outcomes we're driving toward, then they can figure out the how. Then they come back to me with the how and we test. And the back and forth conversation to me has been so invigorating because they're out of their comfort zone and I'm out of mine. But if we agree that we don't know what each other knows, but we can figure out how to make those two work together, then we make some progress. And that's what I enjoy doing. I enjoy that solution-oriented approach to solving real business problems toward real business outcomes for both our admin and for our learners.
So you and I have both put on multiple educational and communication sessions. We've been on panels together. I've seen you, you've seen me. And you said something earlier that really struck me is that we tend to communicate and put on training the way we want to receive it. I rarely think beyond that, I will admit. So what's been the biggest surprise for you around the consumption of compliance, either communications or educational material at Skillsoft?
Again, as an internal practitioner, what I know is risk. I know risk. I know risk management. I know risk assessment. I know risk mitigation. I know what controls need to be in place. I know how to monitor and test those controls. I know how to implement those tests and controls. But what I don't know, and I think for me, the best part of joining Skillsoft has been understanding more about what I don't know. And I know human behavior, but I don't know how people retain information. I don't know why people forget information. I don't know why people need reinforcements in different forms. I didn't realize that, well, when I reflect, and this goes back to my kids' messages, right? When I reflect on the type of learners that my children are, I got three different types of learners. One is very emotional, emotionally driven learning. She is an empath. She will not forget any emotion she felt watching a video or a film. I've got a tactile learner. She needs to move some things around. She needs to check underneath some things. She needs to feel what she's learning in order to remember it. I've got another learner. Now he's still little. But he just needs to be told with those eyes, you know, those parent eyes. He needs to be told what to do and what not to do. There needs to be very clear boundaries over what to do and what not to do. And so when I'm reflective on the fact that there are three different types of learners, why wouldn't we have assumed or applied that we're going to get a lot of different type of learners in our work environment? And fortunately or unfortunately, we probably don't know what type of learner they are. And so if we assume, and again, I'm probably the more tactile learner. So if I am assuming that because I'm a tactile learner, I want to implement tactile training or learning, then I'm missing a whole bunch of different population that don't learn like I do. And so what I have learned at Skillsoft is really to first understand that there are different type of learners. To understand adult learning theory that tells you what types of objectives are you trying to achieve via this learning? Is it awareness? Is it skill application? Is it, you know, what are you trying to achieve? And then does your learning actually do that for all types of learners? And so what I am learning is why variety matters, why you need different types of assets. Why reinforcement matters, because you got to fight that forgetting curve. And then how you present different kind of emotional components, tactile components, and very instructional and directive components has to be varied so that you can meet learners where they are, so you can get learners where they need to be. I did not know that or appreciate that as an internal practitioner. I didn't.
Now, let me overlay another nuance or perhaps challenge. You have lived and worked outside the United States, and you bring that experience to the table. How do you now take the concepts that you just articulated about learning and put an outside the U.S. cultural component on it? How do you help a company think through that first as a tech company, but then a U.S. multinational who has to deliver compliance learning literally across the globe?
Yeah. So interestingly, I reflect on, you know, when I started and we deliver training in 32 different languages and I really have consciously invested in the dubbed over voicing, which can be rather expensive. And my initial questions were, is that necessary And why would we do that? Because in my experience, again, internationally, and when I worked overseas, I serviced industries and companies across the globe. I always say as far east as Jakarta and as far west as Silicon Valley. So very different cultures. And we always deliver training, whether it was e-learning or in-person training, in English. And we always assumed that because English was usually the language of business, despite it not being everyone's first language, was comfortable. It was comfortable for us. And it kind of goes back to the point I was just making, which is we were delivering it in a way that was comfortable for us, not taking into account how people learn, where they were most comfortable learning, and thinking about how they are able to retain and then apply that information outside of that setting. And so one of the things that I am very, very conscious of now, I'll never forget, Tom, when I would deliver the training, whether it was in Jakarta or Kuala Lumpur, they would say, "You talk so fast," which is a very common critique. "You talk so fast." I didn't think I was talking fast. But I think particularly when people are communicating in different languages, it's not about being capable of communicating in English. It's about how do you retain and then are able to apply that. And so speed has a difference, language, accent, all of those things impact the learner's ability to retain and apply that information. And so part of what I can do is make sure that, again, we're meeting those learners with that speed, with that language, and with images that resonate with them so that they feel like they were thought about during the development of the training, which creates that buy-in, and then they are able to retain and apply it better. We've all sat through a training where we're like, "This was not created for me. It has nothing to do with my job. I don't see anyone that looks like me. I can't even understand it. And why did you send it?" We do not want to create those learning experiences because, Tom, I feel like those type of learning experiences make you lose the learner. And I have a hashtag, don't lose the learner. Because if you lose the learner, you'll never get them back. You'll never get that credibility back. You'll never get that buy-in back. You'll never get their openness to receiving the information that you need them to receive to then apply it. So we don't want to lose the learner. That's our goal. Every training we create, will you lose the learner? And that's how we're trying to develop it. And learners are global. Our customers are global. And so we're trying to ensure that we have that global solution that allows them to not lose their learner despite their geographic location.
Let me change the focus just a little bit to certainly over the last quarter or this quarter of 2023, we've had as dramatic a set of announcements from the Department of Justice as any quarter I remember. It started with Kenneth Polite and the corporate enforcement policy, the CEP, and the changes which companies may be able to avail themselves of in terms of a discount. Then we had in March speeches by Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco and Kenneth Polite and the 2023 version of the evaluation of corporate compliance programs. How are you and Skillsoft able to take the guidance from the Department of Justice and be able to update and incorporate it into training modules going forward? How does that technically work?
I think about DOJ, and I know anyone listening to this in the European Union or Europe is also like, we got a bunch of regulations and stuff going on here too. When I look at the core of what my job is, risk is not static. Risk and the management of it has to be agile. And so one of the really cool things about my job is the cadence of our product development and strategy, and our product being learning assets, that product development happens every year. And my job is to understand what new, emerging, recurring, or outlier risks that the ethics and compliance professional and practitioner is dealing with, from clawbacks to voluntary disclosure to off-channel communication to ESG, to ethical AI, to sustainability, to supply chain risks. That's my job. because if they're new and they're emerging or they're recurring, you're going to need to educate somebody about it, whether it's your board, whether it's your general employee population, whether it's your procurement department, because through that education, they will then learn what their obligations are on behalf of the company. We have to now disclose labor risks within our supply chain, the environmental risks in our supply chain. If you're present in Germany, right, that's already an obligation on your behalf. People don't know what that is. A lot of people who you need to understand what the risks are in that supply chain don't understand what it means, what they need to do about it, and how they can help you achieve that goal of reporting and management. So that education is the first control, the first component that I take this personally, Tom, that I need to make sure that you're able to educate whoever you need to educate on what it means and how to apply that in their daily job. So as I think about all of those announcements you just mentioned, as I think about what are the emerging risks, I create courses around that. We create a roadmap that meets that need and that is very agile in meeting that need. We listen to our customers. I talk to customers a lot, as I said earlier. If there is something that they need to educate on that we haven't thought about it, we go think about it. And we think about how we can effectively then present learning and engagement so that they are able to educate their employee population on that. And that's the fun part. That's the part I actually get and understand of my job, which is, what are the risks? What are people training on? And I think if we were to look at what a code of conduct and the risks that were mentioned in a code of conduct were 10 years ago to maybe even what it should be now, I won't necessarily say what it is now because I think we have some opportunity there, but what it should be now, those risks should not be the same. So therefore, what you're educating people on should not be the same. And that's what Skillsoft and I get to be able to iterate on to make sure that as those risks change, people have the content and the delivery mechanisms to be able to educate and engage on those risks.
I said, unfortunately, we're near the end of our time for this episode, but I was wondering if our listeners wanted any more information on yourself or any of the topics you've touched on, what would be the best place or places for them to go?
Yeah, find me on LinkedIn, would love to chat. I can always put you in the right place. I think what's so important, Tom, and what I love about your community of practitioners is that I believe we're all in this together. And at the end of the day, the reason I do what I do is because I love ethics and compliance. I love it. I think it matters. I think creating an ethical and compliant community and a culture that is sustainable matters. And the work that I do on a daily basis, whether you're a Skillsoft customer or not, I want to solve for how we become more effective, how we become more efficient, how we continue to scale and sustain the scalability of the impact that our programs can make within our organizations and, quite frankly, within the world. And it starts with that conversation. It starts with that vulnerability about what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, what we could do better, and how we can make that impact that we all desire to do. So reach out. Let's talk. Clearly, I like to talk. So I'm here.
I said thanks again, and I greatly look forward to continuing this conversation.
If you want to stay up to date on the latest innovations in compliance and help your business run more efficiently, subscribe to this podcast and help spread the word by leaving a review.